Accession number 27193, Reel 5.
Sergeant Major Conn, Reel 5. You're saying that you had to use Bangalore torpedoes against the pillboxes around...
Going across the plane, yeah.
How did you actually use a Bangalore torpedo?
I didn't use them. I hadn't got a clue how they use them. They just put them down and, of course, you know, across the water, and then they set them off. Mm. It's an explosion. Like, you know, I don't know.
Tell me about the kangaroo. What was that like?
It's a tank. It's a track tank, you know what I mean?
Which carries
the troops. It's a light troop carrier.
How many soldiers could
you
get?
You get a platoon of men in hand anyway.
So you got 30 men in one?
Get them in, that's the question.
Was this the first time you've been in kangaroos?
That's right, yeah.
Did you have any training in how to use them before you went into
the attack? No, not before that time. Oh. No, never used them before. Oh. But like everything else, when it comes up, you've got to use them. Get to the best of your ability.
Who was actually driving them? Were these British?
The tankies and that, yeah. Oh, yes. But as you say, the actual battle of forming up in the battle on the plateau, we had the 79th Armoured Division, two brigades of them, with the 22nd Dragoon Guards and the 9th Royal Tank Regiment. Mm. And we were sort of getting ready to go into action. And of course, this is just recently, we've had a bit of a barney with this monument, the Built Italy Half, where they managed to get a tank to represent the liberation of Le Havre, and it was to the Polar Bear Division, the 49th West Rhine Infantry Division. And this Captain Hamilton, who's wrote that book, The Actine Meinen, of
Ian
Flames,
Hamilton.
22nd Dragoon Guards, and he had they built a wall with all the badges on there of all the regiments that took part. Because he had the 79th Army Division at the top. And I said, you're not on. I said, that should be the Polar Bear Division at the top. You were supporting troops, only two brigades of you. He said, yeah, but we were on this actual place. I said, you were, but I said, we were behind. I remember our battalion being behind your tanks. I said, when we went across this one, and I said, all the ground was flooded and everything. And I said, you got stuck in the mud and everything, but the infantry carried on. I said, that's it. And I said, you had 27 tanks knocked out in front of us. I said, but the infantry carried on. They took the points, I said, you know. So anyway, I've had a lot of trouble, and I've got it all down there in Wellingley. And we have now got on the top, I might have a photograph, of the 49th Division. Oh, these, by the way, some of the photographs I had taken when I went out this last time at Bannerville.
Yes.
There's a little kid, Schweimer, good runner. My Corporal Holly, Edgley, another one. Where's the other one? There's a Captain Shell, I think. I got on there as well somewhere. Ah, there he is, Captain Shell.
This would be Bannerville La Campagne, near Caen.
Bannerville, yeah, near Caen, that's it. Mm. Anyway, this one here is a memorial they've got.
Yes.
Then you've got the 51st Highland Division on the other side of it, which is that one there.
Yeah.
You know.
In this,
and I think that's a better one, actually, isn't it?
It is. It's slightly clearer. The badges turned out. In this attack on the pillboxes, how are the pillboxes actually laid out and deployed on the plateau above La Havre? What was the sort of style of them?
Well, they were sort of separated, you know what I mean, in various positions, of course.
How far apart were they?
Oh, I couldn't tell you, really. No, I couldn't, don't think I could remember that. How far apart they're going back at. Memory. Spread out a bit, you know. Yeah. Spread out a bit. Looking in various directions as well. But anyway.
Did you have heavy artillery support for that attack?
We had artillery support, yes. Of course, yeah. We went in that side, yeah. And then, of course, we went from there down into Fontainebleau. We went through. Went through Mauvaines. Mauvaines, yeah, Mauvaines. Yes. And then out, down into Fontainebleau, Malay. M-A-L-L-E-T-T, yeah, Malay. And then from there we went down into Le Havre. We watched the bombing of Le Havre. Oh, God, that was terrible, that. We could even see the pilots as they were coming down, you know. And the brigade was reported to have said that this is not war, it's murder, as we're going in. But the fight was, you see, that after years we went back there, and there was this Captain Hamilton who was giving a lecture on it as well, and the French people. And they said who was to blame for it, you know what I mean? Now, the commander of the garrison had been given three options to surrender, and he didn't. That, to allow the French people to come out, but some of them decided to stay, and that was it. But they had to do something about it, because we wanted that port so that we could get the goods to support the Second Army. So, with the help of the Mackie, they're the people that give the information that the Germans were in there as well. But anyway, they went in there and bombed it, and really did bomb it. God, it caused havoc. But we took a hell of a lot of prisoners there as well, you know, as we went in. And I always remember going into Le Havre, and we captured so many, and I sent a little Greek bloke, he was a company battalion barber. Mickey something. Anyway, I sent him back with 25 prisoners. As he got to the top of the bank, he met the brigadier and the commanding officer. And the commanding officer said, "Hello, Mickey." He said, "How many prisoners you got there?" He says, "25, sir." 25? He said, "You got more than 25 there," he said. He turned out, he said, "Well, there's only 25 when I started." He said, "A lot of them have packed in and thrown their arms on and joined him. He had about 100 prisoners under behind him." That was me. Oh, this little Greek fella he was. Oh, dear. But anyway, we went in there and captured the German paymaster. We shared a lot of the loot out between the company. Had a lot of French francs.
What was the condition of the town when you went into it?
Pardon?
What was the condition of the town?
The town was in a hell of a state, yeah. The houses really flattened on some of them, you know. And they were in a terrible state. But when we got in there, then of course, unfortunately, we didn't stay there long. Mm. I did find a cave right in the cliffs with a railway going in, which had a lot of ammunition stores. And I got a Beretta rifle, gun out there.
Pistol.
And I came back and I told them about it, and said, so they decided to go back again to see what they could get. But when we got there, there was already a bloody Highlander on guard. The 51st Highland Chief took over and guarded the place. But anyway, as I said, we didn't stay there long, and they pulled us back, and we went to Lillebon, a place called Lillebon.
When you were fighting your way through the pillboxes, were they still shooting when the
kangaroos went through? Oh, yeah. They're still firing, aren't they? Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, they're still having a go, but as I say, we killed a lot, captured a lot, and that was it.
What about in the town? Was there a lot of resistance when you went into the town?
Not when we went into the town. There's the Mackie got onto one of our company commanders there at that time, and he said, "Oh, there's some Germans in this building." And when we went down there, the tank was there and everything, but nobody there. There's nobody. It all flown. It all gone. And the rest of the judges had packed in, you know, and really give up.
Was this the first time on which you'd had cooperation from the Mackay?
No, we had cooperation from all the way along, you know, from the Belgians and the French. But a lot of them was misguided. A lot of information was,
What they give you?
Well, they just said this was happening, that was happening. When they got there, it wasn't right.
Did that start from the very beginning in Normandy, or did that come later on?
All the way through we had that trouble with them. They couldn't rely on it, you know. And because they used to get out of hand and they used to get in the way as well, you know. It was the same when we crossed the Odin, you know, to go over the river Ryle. We had some of the Mackay there. As a matter of fact, I still write to one of them. His name. I got a letter from his daughter not long ago about him. Martin, a fellow called Martin. Yeah. And he was there, and got in Pont Audemer. They've got a monument in outside the council offices, and it's by the Dutch and Belgians who liberated Pont Audemer, because they were only attached to the 6th Airborne, but they actually hadn't done any fighting there. But apparently, Princess Juliana and her husband unveiled that monument, and this Mackay fella, Martin. He said, "I'll blow that one up." He said, "Because it was the 49th Division that took his place." When we went over there, one of my friends is the chairman of the Polar Bear Association, and he's an RE, and he was one of them that went into to have a go at the bridge. You know, they had the bridge there, and there's a cafe right on the corner. And he, when we went there, they had this laying the wreath and that. He told the French people that when he went into Pont Audemer, he got into this cafe and pinched all the beer and all the drinks. He said he looted it. But anyway, that was it. But there, that was it.
When you take the Lavis, you didn't spend long there. You moved on up to Lillebonne.
Yes. We stayed there and we rested there. Played the Lillebonnais football, and had the Lillebonnais versus the Essex Regiment and the professionals. That was good. Oh, what do you call it? That was a lovely place, that as well. And then, of course, we had having a field fire and things like that. Range fire, actually, not field fire.
So you were doing training?
Yeah, did a bit of training.
Was this the first time you'd done training since you'd landed on D-Day?
That's it.
It is?
That's about the only time.
So you'd had a pause then?
Yeah. And we had reinforcements and that. And then we moved up.
After the attack on Havre, then, what was the sort of strength of your platoon? Were you... down in numbers.
Oh yeah, I was right way down. I only had about 14, that's all. 14 men. I didn't have many more than that.
And you should have had about 40 then.
Oh, 14?
You should have had about 40.
Oh, I should have had about 40, But we didn't get a lot of, what they call it, so later on we got reinforced again, you know. But I never got right up to strength. Never really get up to strength.
And how did your replacements get on? The chaps who came out to replace battle casualties, did it take time to get settled in?
Well, we got up to Nijmegen, and then of course we had to retrain these people.
Yeah.
And that photo I just showed you, the sergeant head, was it where you teach them how to throw grenades. And one of them dropped the grenade and turned around. He said, "Sergeant, I dropped the grenade." And he said, "Get out!" And he pushed him away. And he got behind the wall, but unfortunately, a fragment caught old Sergeant Head in the nose and busted his nose. He went off to hospital. He never came back to the battalion after that. No. He's a damn good sergeant as well, old Napper.
Did you get any replacements coming in who were from the Essex Regiment? Come back after being wounded, or did they come from all over?
Some of them did come back. Some of them did come back. Some of them. We had a Corporal Reed who was wounded in Tilly Cecil's, as I say, in 13th Platoon. He came back And he was on the island on patrol, coming back off patrol, and killed by friendly fire. Lincolns.
How did that happen?
As he's coming back in, the patrol was fired on by the Lincolns.
Was that because there was trouble with the password or some other reason?
They hadn't realised they were in the Lincoln area, you know.
They got lost.
And the Lincolns, as they're coming back to a different route to what they should have done. And, of course, the Lincolns were a bit trigger happy at that time, I think, and they just opened fire. Didn't challenge them. Just opened fire. Mm. And they killed these. Old Corporal Reed, yeah. That was about a week after he'd come back in the battalion. Shame, really, wasn't it? You know, really is.
You're saying earlier on that you'd had a chance meeting with someone from Stamford La Hope and he got a message back to your family.
Yeah.
Were you able to stay in touch with the family by post?
I hadn't done that, no.
No.
No, I hadn't been able to keep in touch, you see. And, he wouldn't be able to know where to write to, actually. But anyway, he went and saw the mother and told her what she said, you know. And that was it. I got a surprise when I got a letter from the old girl saying he'd been there. And his name was Welsh, and I tried to contact him, but I don't know what happened. Whether he moved away or not, I don't know. But it was a shame. I'd like to have contacted him here.
And, I mean, did you receive any mail while you were...
Oh, yes, you used to get the mail now and again, yeah.
How often would you get posts coming in?
Yes, about once a week. Once a week, yes, again like that. Mine, I didn't write too often at the time because I didn't have time.
You were a bit busy.
Too busy to write. Mm. But then never mind, we kept. And
when you were preparing to go into an attack, like the one at Verrières or the one at Le Havre and so forth, how would the orders be given out? What would happen when you were getting ready to...
Well, you get the whole group, you know what I mean? You got together and then you were told what was happening, where you had to go and this, you know.
Who would do the O group? Would it be the platoon commander or the company commander?
Company commander.
So company commander. Okay, who would attend the O group normally?
Well, it would be platoon commanders would attend then. And of course, being as I didn't ever know, you know, I was always there.
Okay, so you were commanding as a sergeant, so you'd be called to the O group. What would happen when you got to the O group? You'd arrive at the location.
That's right, yeah.
And then.
Yeah, and the maps were out, and they show you the position, where they want you to go, and how you got, what was going to happen, who was supporting you, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was all given in detail.
Did you take written notes of an O group, or were you expected to...
Yeah, sometimes you should jot them down, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, you should jot them down.
Were you ever given orders in writing, or were the orders always verbal?
Always verbal, mostly verbal. Oh, yeah.
Okay. How long would it normally take to be briefed for an attack in that way?
About 3/4 of an hour.
So about 45 minutes. Who would actually... Would the company commander do the whole thing? Would he just talk...
He used to get the old groups that where company commanders went to the commanding officer.
Yeah.
They had that old group then. Then they came back and you got the old group to the companies.
And he would talk you through it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he have a questions at the end, in case anything was...
any questions anybody had, any suggestions to make, and things like that, yes.
Yeah. So he'd give you the intention and the method.
That's right.
And the information on friendly and enemy, and then he'd say, was that clear?
That's right. And anybody got any questions?
Okay.
And that's then, you come up with anything you want.
Right.
And say, well, didn't like that, and didn't like it, so, you know. No, right. When you get there... You make the decision.
Oh, I see. So he allowed you discretion.
Oh, yes. As long as it didn't interfere with the complete plan, you know what I mean?
So you can, you had to, but you could...
How you deployed your men when you got there.
Was your own decision.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's giving you quite a lot of responsibility, isn't it?
Well, it is, actually, yeah.
Because you've got to decide.
Yeah. Because you always let them know what you're going to do anyway.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a change of plan, they say, well, look, we're going to do this. The conditions you've told us can't apply in this. So, all right, go ahead.
Right. And what would you do then? Would you then go and brief your corporals? Or
They've come back to platoon.
So you come down to platoon.
Yeah.
And how long would you take to tell them what?
It wouldn't take me long to tell them.
Right.
About half an hour or more, that's it.
And did you have maps to brief them?
Yes, I had a map.
Yeah.
I used to have a map. And I knew exactly where they were. I always carried a map, yeah.
Were the maps generally good? Were they accurate?
Yeah, they were the ordnance service maps.
Yeah.
They had, you know.
Did you ever get air photographs as a way of planning and briefing?
On occasion, but not too often. Not too often did we get any aerial photographs, no. Just the ordinary, what you call it, on the maps, you know, on the scale, what you're going to do. You had to go by that.
Yeah.
Possibly the battalion commanders might have had them, you know what I mean, but not us.
Yeah.
No, we never got them.
Did you ever go to a battalion briefing? Or
no.
You were company briefing?
I was always company briefing, yeah.
Interesting. I think you were saying that it came to a certain point where you were starting to advance very rapidly. Where did that happen, when you started to really push on?
Really push on? Well, that was at Le Havre, yeah.
After Le Havre?
Oh, yeah. And that's after Le Havre, when we went to Lillebon, and of course we had to go right up into Belgium. Mm. We stayed on the outskirts of Dieppe.
Yeah.
Dieppe. And then we then pushed on up into Holland.
Do you remember where you crossed into Holland?
We went up into Holland. A place called Oostmaal. And that was before we had to cross a river near a factory. Before we relieved the coilies at Ricky Vorsel. And it was at Ricky Vorsel where we pulled in there. And that's when we started doing patrol. We got attacked while we were at Ricky Vorsel.
What sort of position did you have at Ricky
Vorsel? Well, we're in houses and things like that.
Yeah.
And we'd taken up positions there. And we had in front the fields and the woods.
Yeah.
And we got attacked by a company of Germans came in, and I always remember we fired at them and kept firing, and one particular, I had a rifle at that time, and I picked off the officer and I fired at him, and I fired 5 bullets, and the bloke was still coming. I said, I can't have missed him, and he got within about 5 yards of me and he dropped, and I went over and he had 5 bullets in him, so I never missed him.
He must have been drugged.
Yeah. I'm sure he must have been drugged. Yeah. And we buried them in the churchyard in Ricky Vorsel. The next morning, they're all out again. The people wouldn't allow them to be in the graveyard.
What, local people?
Yeah, the local population. So we had some photographs somewhere, which we had taken at that place. Anyway, the locals wouldn't have them done there, so we had to bury them somewhere else until such times, you know, the people of the War Graves Commission put them somewhere, you know.
When the Germans were making their attack on you, how were they formed?
Coming in a full, coming in an extended order.
In a long line?
Long line, yeah. Oh yeah.
What sort of speed were they moving?
Well, they were running.
They were running, straight
forward. They were running at us. But at this time,
What strength were you? Was this a battalion position you were in at Ricky
Vorsel? Oh, yeah. The whole battalion was in Ricky Vorsel.
Yeah.
And the company positions, you know, you had the company positions and that. Yeah.
So they were about a company of them then were attacking you.
That's
on,
right, yeah.
What, a company front or something?
On a company front, yeah. And whether there might have been attacks happening elsewhere in what they call it as well, like, you know. But this was on my front anyway. And then after that,
did they have any support, any mortar or artillery or anything like that to prepare their way?
No, not really. They had a couple of mortars came over, that's all. But there wasn't, they weren't supported by artillery like that. They just came as an infantry, what do you call it, attack.
This is in daylight.
That's in daylight, yeah.
Sounds almost like a suicidal.
Yes, looks like it, yeah. I'm quite sure half of them were dug up their eyebrows. A lot of them used to say, like, you know, a lot of the officers said, like, they must have been drugged.
Yes.
Well, that officer that shot 5 times, he must have been.
Yeah.
They keep coming like that.
What sort of age was this chap who you
officer? Oh, the young fella. He's about 30.
What was his physical condition? Did you get an idea of whether he was...
Well, I don't know, mate. He looked really, fit, I suppose, yeah. Athletic. I'll have to take a tape. But, it's about 30. That's about all his age was.
Where do you shot him? Where
in the body.
In the
chest. Yeah, everyone in the chest. Must have missed his heart.
Must have been really fit.
He must have been bloody fit as well. But he kept coming, and I said, God alive. Well, I was ready to bayonet him when he came in, but he was there. And he dropped about 5 yards in front.
Did the rest keep coming, or did some of them turn back?
Oh, we had a lot of them stopped.
Yeah.
Before he ever came anywhere near us. A lot of them stopped, and a lot of them turned and ran.
Right.
And went back.
But he kept going.
He kept going. Because they, used to have the sergeants and that there behind them, and if anybody sort of followed, they used to shoot them. Wouldn't let them run.
Mm.
And so I must have shot the bloody sergeants as well. I think our folks must have killed the sergeants and all that. So there we are. Mm. But it was a terrifying minute at the time,
Where did you get to then after Ricky Versal? Were you in Ricky Versal for a long time?
Well, we're in there for some time. We did the patrols from there.
Mm.
And I always remember that I had an officer, John Barrett. He came from the Lancashire Fusiliers. And he was a bit dicey. He was scared of his own shadow at times, And there's times when company commander Major Willis used to come round the company area, and he used to say, where's Mr. Barrett? I said, well, he's round having a look at the platoon positions, Oh, he said, all right, he said. So the following day he came and did the same thing. Now, come here, sir, he said. Why is it I come round, he said, Mr. Barrett is always inspecting the other sections, he said, I never see him. And just then his batman came out of the cell and said, has he gone? And the company commander turned around, no, he hasn't gone, he's still here. Now, where is Mr. Barrett? Bring him out. Mm. And that was it.
What happened to him?
We sent him to battalion headquarters and he got a job Central Mail. But anyway, before that, I went on a patrol with him. And I went on a night patrol with him towards, Learnhout. Yeah, towards Learnhout. And we got to a little hamlet. There's only a few houses. There was a farm house on the left of the road, and there was a little few houses on the right. We got to there, and I heard movement and that in front, and I said to him, come on, let's see if we can get a prisoner. I turned around, and he's on his way back. No, we've done what we've come to do. He said, go back. Mm-hmm. Off we went back.
How many of you were there on that patrol?
On that patrol, there was 10 of us.
Had a whole section.
Yeah, I had a whole section then, made up from the rest of the platoon, So anyway, I went back and he reported to the headquarters. And the next morning, next morning early, there was the other officer came to us. I can't remember his name. He's from Lancashire Fusiliers as well, a little ginger-haired fella. And he came up and he said, how did he get there and all the rest of it. And I was showing him on the map which direction we'd taken and where we got to and where we finished and how we get there. Well, I used to send off as in a couple of blokes in front. One used to overlap the other before the country, and we just carried on, and that was the way we did. Anyway, I told this officer what we'd done, and one of my lance corporals, Martin, he says, I'll show them where the way out, Sergeant. I said, no, you've done your duty. You've done it at night time. There's no need for you to go at all. I said, they'll find their own way. And this officer says, well, if he'd like to show us, we said, we'd be very appreciative. And the lad said, yes, I'll come with you. So off they went. Well, he got in there, and then the next minute, I got a call from battalion headquarters, get a platoon together, go out and find out what's happening out of the platoon. God, shut up. So off I went and I took a platoon out. I had 8 men with us, and I took the platoon out, the patrol out, and I got to where I went and I saw these blokes running back and forwards. So I shouted to them, you know what I mean? And some of them put their hands up. I said, don't you bloody put your hands up to me, I said. And some of them had no rifles with them. So I said, where's your rifles? So I was like, find them. Got on, and I went on, and I said, where's the officer? He said, he's been shot. I said, where is he? He's in.